Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Hey, Purple for the Wind fans. Now, said it a number of times on a show, it's just you and me and the Devil Make Three. Now, I never say that. But as a way to support the show and keep the independent Viking warship moving forward, go to purplefdw.com/love, and it'll show all the various ways that you can help keep our sails full as we go on to new lands. Without further ado, let's get to the show.
Thanks for listening to the Purple for the Win podcast, the weekly podcast dedicated to the pain and pleasure that is the Minnesota Vikings. Make sure to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Purple for the Win, all spelled out. And the website, as always, purplefdw.com. Again, thanks for listening and putting up with all the shenanigans.
This is the Purple for the Win podcast.
Great cash, homie.
Seventh selection in the 2005 NFL draft, the Minnesota Vikings select Troy Williamson.
Now second for his hands, and the Redskins will go to the Super Bowl.
Barnes got five to choose from, got hit, got thrown down, and is shaken up.
As he shoots the moon to the fans here in Green Bay.
That is a disgusting act by Randy Moss.
Gary Anderson has missed a field goal for the first time in 2 years. Unbelievable.
That's about as unbelievable as having a very free-form, all-encompassing sports and life podcast on a football podcast. But yeah, it's the bye week, so what are you going to do? Purple for the Win podcast dedicated to the pain and pleasure that is the Minnesota Vikings, powered by VikingsTerritory.com. I'm your not-so-humble host, Andy Carlson, at Andy Carlson Show on the Twitter machine. I'm not a journalist. And I'm not a reporter. I am merely a Jackass fan with a microphone. Please treat the opinions thusly. And today, a little treat for you guys coming to you on a Thursday. I know. I don't even know what day it is. I don't care. Tom Schreier at tschreier3 on the Twitter machine of Cold Omaha. What's up?
Not too much. I think it's Wednesday, Andy.
No, yeah, exactly. No, it's dropping on Thursday. That's the never mind the man behind the curtain, et cetera thing.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, to be fair, I have a terrible like concept of days and time, and it, you know, when you're covering sports, it's not like you get like weekends, you know what I mean? There's some large periods of time where you get off. There's some times where, you know, like with this last Twin series, it literally was just on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So,
well, you cover baseball mainly, so it's like they play 8 games in 7 days, and somehow the season still takes 9 months.
Yeah, exactly. And it especially when we had a season pass up until the point that the ticket went belly up. And when I was covering just about every game, I said I it's either weeks that I'm, you know, up all the time because I was literally at Target Field most of the time, and then I was recording podcasts and writing stories, or it's like weeks that I sleep. And it's literally like a, you know, trying to get, you know, a couple, you know, 8-9 hours of sleep, plus I'd probably take a nap during the day or whatever. And, you know, for my friends who work more traditional, you know, 9-to-5 jobs or whatever, they're like, what is up with this kid? I never see him. And then when I see him, he's sleeping. So it's an odd life. It's definitely fun, but it is definitely an odd way to go about things.
All right. So when you were in the, like, the main, like, stream beat sort of thing, like, what would be your typical, like, day if the Twins are playing that night?
Yeah, so I mean, it obviously changes day game or night game, but you know, if it went like two night games and then a day game, I would usually, Twins are the most extensive like coverage. You're there probably more than you would be with any other team. You know, football, it's just practices and then there's no pregame, so you show up, you know, when the game starts, and then you, you know, wait around for the locker room afterwards. But with Twins, Paul Molitor usually went around 4:10, or at least that's when he said he would go. Usually, you know, it creep into like 4:25, 4:30. But, you know, I'd show up. I'd probably leave for the park a little after 3, maybe. Try to get there by, like, 3:30. And, you know, any of that time you have in between the, you know, when you get to the park and when the manager goes, you know, when you first arrive, you see the players out there throwing around the ball and stuff, getting ready. And then they come in, and it's one of my favorite sports to cover because you actually have this whole time to just kind of chat. And, you know, you can do a little feature if you want, you know, maybe a 10-15 minute interview, or you just get to know people and then, you know, they're going to be more forthcoming with information, obviously, because they trust you. And then, you know, the manager sessions with Guardy was a little more laid back. you know, monitor actually stands in front of like the where everything's filmed with the banner in the back and stuff. He, you know, he's a little more kind of by the book. But you do also get him sometimes on days where he's more relaxed and, you know, he's telling stories about growing up a hockey fan, or, you know, with Dave Winfield, you know, how they grew up together and how special it was that they, I think it was the same day 3 years apart, that they hit 3,000 hits. And, you know, that's to me is the fun part. You know, covering the game's nice, but basically I just go upstairs, transcribe that stuff. I'll maybe write something. And then you come down. This is super rare. This is not common in baseball, but Terry Ryan actually speaks with the media half an hour before the game. And then
have so much pomp and circumstance just around a single baseball game.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. Like, think about this. This is, and I'm just describing one night game. This would be repeated 81 times or whatever if you went to every game. Now it's a little different, you know. If, you know, obviously the game takes place and then you do the stuff afterwards. But you know, the beat writers, you know, like Lavelle and Phil Miller and Mike Biardino and whoever else is covering that game. I mean, you're there from, you probably leave your house at 3:30, and you get home. Some of those guys work until like they're probably going to bed at 1 or 2. And so
that's why they're all the picturesque of health, like Lavelle and Bernardino.
Yeah, luckily they're
just like Greek god Adonises.
Luckily, the food's good. I don't know if it's a healthy lifestyle, but especially because you're, you know, those guys travel and stuff. But they actually, it's Lainey and Tish are the two ladies who run the food for the media. And you see, I mean, it's crazy. You're sitting there and you got, you know, Bill Smith, the ex-GM, who's still working there, and you got Jack Goin, who's the sabermetric guy, and they're all just kind of sitting around there. Tom Hanneman and, you know, Jamie Hirsch and all the Fox Sports North people are on one table, and it's kind of nice, and it's cool that, look, the GM of the Minnesota Twins comes down, and while you're eating, is going to sit there and chat with you, and he gets angry sometimes if you ask, you know, questions that he doesn't like or pick his, you know, there's certain things that really bug him, but in general, he's really forthcoming, and at the end of the season, I'm trying to think. Yesterday, you know, he spent an hour just discussing the team and how they did, and I don't know if it's all that different from the other teams. The Wild are the most painful, but that's like a PR thing. That's not necessarily the guys who run it.
Well, it's because he can't understand Mike Yo when he's got dipping.
Exactly. No. And
now I never got to the bottom of that because it always looks like he does have a little something in, but I don't want it to be where it's like he has like a lip disorder, and then I feel really bad talk about it all the time. But I've never gotten a good answer one way or the other.
I should look. I've only spent one season there, and even there, like it just became uncomfortable because it was obvious they like didn't want us there. I mean, we were such on the low end of the totem pole. We were on like a daily credential, and you know, of course, the ticket wasn't that big. So I need to investigate if he's dipping or if he has a lip disorder. But and the funny thing is, he looks young. Like, even though he's kind of balding, because you think of those old NHL coaches, you know, Hitchcock's been around forever, Quinville's been around forever, you know, Sutter's been around forever, and you have Mike Yeo, and you're like, what's this kid doing running this team? You know, he looks like kind of young, like he'd get out there and play.
I've seen pictures of Mike Yeo with hair. He actually has hair like Carrot Top, so I understand why he shaves it.
That's hilarious, actually.
Actually, I completely made that up, but I'm gonna run with it.
Oh, okay. I'm good with it. I'm gonna pretend that's right. But no, I mean, in hockey's, you know, I've covered the Sharks too, and that was, you know, hockey by nature is supposed to be a relaxed environment, kind of like baseball, where you get to sit down and talk. Basketball is a little different because it's smaller teams, and like the highest profile players, even like Wiggins and you know, Towns and some of these younger players. Even Levine with winning the dunk contest, you know, they're almost kind of like basketball players can become famous kind of quick because there's not many good ones.
Yeah, plus they're cool with the reporters because they need you guys to buy them beer.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Levine's hitting me up and saying, hey, where's the kegger at?
All right, let's touch on the Vikings real quick so I can maintain our credibility here. And then, yeah, hopefully people will stick around because, I mean, there is – plenty of other things to talk about is the bye week and the Vikings, you know, so far through the quarter season, interesting 2-2, a bit of a roller coaster of emotion. And then just coming off the quote unquote moral victory against Denver. How do you think the Vikings have done so far at the quarter mark of the year?
You know, the San Francisco game was brutal. From a personal standpoint, I went to school out there and I was there. I'm trying to think, I was a freshman, I think, when like Sean Hill was the quarterback for the Niners and, you know, Favre to Lewis. And I think that year, if I remember right, San Francisco got off to a hot start, and those guys were talking Super Bowl for the Niners with Sean Hill as their quarterback.
But what?
It's irrational fandom. I mean, there's people who every year think I don't know. Actually, I think Vikings fans probably were pretty realistic that they were like, yeah, 10-6 would be a good season, but I don't know if anyone had them like Super Bowl champs. But yeah, people there were like pretty hyped about them, and they were like, yeah, it's the Vikings, they're gonna kill them. And I actually had two like solid Vikings moments in college where you beat the Niners with that awesome play that probably will live on, kind of, you know, like Favre, I think, is very associated with that play in that kind of time with Brett Favre here. And then there was enough Dallas presence, even though I was in school in California, that beatdown of the Cowboys was great, and it just completely unraveled when all of a sudden everyone else there was a Saints fan, because, of course, people were getting behind the Saints that year. And, you know, you had the 12 men in the huddle, you had just a series of things that went wrong that, you know, culminated in Favre throwing overs, you know, across the field. And I felt like I just, like, public shaming, like, everywhere I went, it was like, oh, I guess you can't root for the Saints. Like, what happened to the Vikings? And, of course, I had talked crap to everyone. So this is the second coming of that, where I texted literally everyone I knew. I probably threw it on Facebook or whatever. I was like, Niners suck, because they do suck. They're terrible. But, like, Niners suck. Vikings are going to run all over you. Peterson's probably going to go for 300 yards. You know, he's hungry and ready to go, as everyone said. And then Carlos Hyde runs all over him. The defense, the run defense was terrible. Teddy Bridgewater is unflappable, doesn't look good. And now you sit at 2-2 and you go, man, this team should be 3-1. And you could really feel good about them, being like, look, the Broncos have the best defense in the league and Peyton Manning. Granted, a 39-year-old Peyton Manning. But now you kind of go, man, like, that's just such a missed opportunity. And now you really have to come out of the bye pretty strong because, you know, Chiefs, I'm trying to think, it's Chiefs, Lions, Bears. You have to beat those teams because then you have, you know, a good Rams defense, whatever with the Raiders, but, you know, Packers, Falcons, Seahawks, Cardinals. If you can't, you know, you're not giving yourself a lot of wiggle room to have a bad game. You already had it. It was the 20-3 loss on Monday night that probably anyone who's a national fan goes, has written off the Vikings because they're like, yeah, if you lose to the Niners 20-3, you can't be that good.
And plus, look at now, the Vikings 2-2, San Francisco 1-3. And except right after that game, it was kind of funny how many of like the Vikings Twitter just kind of committed hiri-kiri and seppuku and just like, it's over, 0-16, let's tank it, let's get Joey Bosa, let's go. But now, it's light years apart of where the Vikings are as opposed to the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, I did think the team took a risk. I was there the next weekend or the next week, and they basically, everyone's immediate response was on to Detroit. And I actually think Mark Craig had a good story in the Star Tribune about how, like, the team's basically not going to talk about that game. But luckily they did kind of turn it around. Probably the Lions are the right victim to have. But, you know, they've turned it around, and I have more faith in the defense now. I still kind of wonder how you have, you know, Zimmer, who's not even just a defensive guy, but a guy who started with the secondary. You have a strong safety like Blanton or Sandejo, it doesn't matter. Where, you know, next to Harrison Smith, and it's just such a, you know, I was talking to Luke Inman on our podcast about this, and, you know, I was like, look at the contrast. Harrison Smith will make most players look bad compared to him, but especially Blanton. And, you know, that's the one point of weakness. But the fact that you can trade Gerald Hodges, and you have, you know, a lot of, I think Anthony Barr and Kendricks and those guys are really good. And, you know, everyone's saying B-Rob's over. He looks really good. Everson Griffin's just kind of scary, you know? I mean, there's no way around that. And, yeah, I think they've recovered. I would have liked to see them come out better against the Broncos. Again, I was just kind of following – I was covering the Twins, but I was following along on Twitter. And basically everyone was saying, why are you having 5-7-step drops? You know, use Peterson more, questioning the play calling, and just, you know, maybe putting Teddy Bridgewater into a tough situation, especially in Denver, where I think Denver probably has some of the most like hardcore fans in the NFL, one of the toughest places to play.
There was quite a bit of purple in the stands, and I kind of postulated the theory that, you know, Denver came to the league in 1960, except they're an AFL team, so the closest National Football League team for about a decade before they merged in the 1970 was the Minnesota Fighting Vikings. So maybe someone's granddad was like, I prefer NFL. It's more serious. The AFL is like this kind of video gamey type of football, even though they didn't have video games back then, but bear with me. And he was like, I'm going to cheer for the Vikings because they're close enough. Because you think the teams around them will be the Broncos, the Chiefs, the Raiders, the Chargers, and they were all AFL teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some truth to that. I think the other thing about Denver, and I only know this because one of my roommates in college is from Littleton, which is just outside the city, and I've spent some time.
Oh, like, whatever happened there? Yeah. Why is that place infamous? Sorry, God.
No, and he went. See, their school system is different. Not that your listeners need to know this, but like, you know, we're here, it's kind of sectioned off. So like, mm-hmm. I was in the Mounds View district, and if I had been like a couple streets over, I would have been in the White Bear district or whatever.
Yep. And your life would have been so much better.
Well, he's in the Hamlet at Columbine. And when mm-hmm. I first showed up, I was like, where did you go to school? And he went to Heritage, so a different school.
Yep.
But he's like, yeah, I easily could have gone there. I think some of my neighbors went there or whatever. But either way, obviously.
So it's like open enrollment?
Yeah, it's almost just kind of random assignment. And I think what they try to do is avoid where you have like, and I don't want to say anything wrong here, but like, White Bear and Irondale are on a different level than Mounds View. I mean, that's just known. And if you have like a house on the White Bear side, it's harder to sell than the Mounds View side. I think that's what they're trying to avoid there. But yeah, it's kind of an interesting system. Either way, what I was trying to get at before we went down that rabbit hole was that...
This is Real Estate Weekly with Andy Carlson and Tom Trier.
It's weird the information I know. Like I don't know how. I feel like I ask people too many questions, just kind of having like a journalistic nature or whatever. But is that like what he told me is, look, I mean, he grew up there and spent most of his life there before, you know, we went to school in California and lives in Omaha now. But he, you know, what he said was a lot of people kind of come and go, especially younger mm-hmm. people. And so really hard to tell because mm-hmm. it's really hard to tell even where a ticket ends up or like how people get in the stadium. But you maybe have like younger Vikings fans who, I mean, I've been skiing out there and it's mostly people from Texas and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't be shocked if that's kind of who that crowd is, especially because as someone who's been in California, I lived in New York for a little bit, you become a bigger Minnesota sports fan or probably abandon it entirely. But if you're out, you know, kind of it's like you against the world. So it's probably you want to show up and represent because, look, it's one of the biggest NFL markets. There's so many people. You know, I went to, you know, college with kids from like Montana and certain places around Colorado that became, you know, it's kind of like how they have the Twins territory. There's like mm-hmm. what's kind of this Broncos nation or, you know, Broncos territory. And I'm sure like, look, if I was living out there, I'd want to rock purple and want to be like, you know, look, you know, it's me against the world. And I think that might be part of it. I mean, that's my theory. Real estate aside and all that.
See, I don't get it about Denver too, because like, I want to say like half a dozen or maybe even eight of my friends from college just moved out to Denver, Colorado for no reason. And I was just like, I don't really get it. I mean, I've been to Denver. I've been to Colorado before. I mean, it's nice. It's pretty, but it's not like anything to write home about. And, you know, they did move out there for the weed reasons. And it's not like a center of industry, like a Silicon Valley or like a, you know, like a Charlotte would be for banking insurance. And I'm like, what's the allure? Why is everyone going out west? Is that the Oregon Trail?
I would say this, like, I would say the vast majority of people I went to college with, regardless if they were from the Bay or not, went up to San Francisco because that would be the natural. Like, San Jose is nice and there's good business there and stuff, but it's a pretty sterile. Like, it's a very nice, very warm city, but pretty sterile. San Francisco is obviously where the culture is, and it's a fun place to be when you're young. But I think the second choice for a lot of people was actually to go to Colorado because you can live there like reasonably. I don't want to say it's cheap because it's expensive, but first of all, you can live in the mountains and then work. You know, what they do is like work the like rafts and stuff like that, or hiking tours. And then you can ski, like kind of be like a ski bum for like a year or two, which some of my friends did. They do this in like Utah and Colorado. And it's kind of fun. Like you can just kind of be young and enjoy yourself. And the city of Denver, I feel like at the very least is very well laid out. And there's a lot of like fun bars there and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned video games, they have like a 1UP bar where you can go and see like the old Pac-Man and Mortal Kombat and stuff. And they have a Brothers just like they have here and up in St. Cloud and stuff like that. And
I got to move to Denver for the Brothers.
I think I thought of that just literally because we ended up there. But I'm trying I can't remember the names of the other bars, but there's like kind of a young crowd and mm-hmm. Something maybe to be said about like meeting people from a different culture, because they're like, I feel like I meet a decent amount of people, especially from Dallas, but you know, around the South too. I felt like I met people from like Arkansas and Georgia and stuff, and I think there's some appeal to that. I like how the city's laid out, but I'm with you. It's not like the mountains are the fun part of it. I'm not mind blown by it. It's not like, you know, Los Angeles or New York or, you know, whatever. It's, you know, Denver's like probably a pretty similar size city. I don't know how they compare, but
Well, two theories about Denver. Maybe one, everyone's religious nuts and they feel like the world's going to flood again, a la Noah style. And, you know, Denver's pretty high up there. Or two, they're really into the Hunger Games. And I think Denver is where the capital is supposed to be, if I remember it. I've never read the books. The wife dragged me to the second movie. It didn't make any sense to me because I didn't see the first one. But I didn't really care. So I was all right.
You're like, oh, is that Denver? That was your, like, parting thought.
It was like, oh, all right. So Jennifer Lawrence and, yeah, like, skin tight stuff. All right. Sold. Go.
Yeah, that's all right. That's right. Nothing wrong with that. I don't know. I don't know anything about those movies or anything. But maybe that is true. And it is so – it's funny. The kid I know from there is not religious at all. Mm. But – I definitely have like met some of his friends, and it's like a, it reminds me. And again, I haven't spent a lot of time in the South, but having like half of the baseball team, like the Twins are from the South, and that's, those people are very religious. And like, I mean, I grew up, I went to, you know, Catholic school, Santa Clara was a Jesuit school or whatever, but it is, it's like, it's almost kind of like a Southern vibe when it comes to religion. That nothing else, you know, about it is like that, but it is very like, you know, I don't know how to put it. Like, people are pretty open and, you know, about their religion and kind of want to pass it on and stuff. And maybe you're right. Maybe they do think it's going to flood. I feel like we're all screwed if it's going to flood and it's going to be very cold on top of those mountains. But
that's all right. No, everyone will just go to the IDS Tower in the cities. We're good. All right. So talk about religion. And after he was traded, Gerald Hodges tweeted out some of, saying like, I don't know, God is good or something like that. I'm trying to make a smooth transition. I don't think we got one. But thoughts on the Hodges trade shipping him to San Francisco?
Kind of like what I said before. Hopefully it's a sign of confidence in the players they had because,
yeah.
I mean, I actually thought Hodges had something to offer. I thought he was a pretty good player and that – and I don't know. I haven't spent a ton of time around him, but he is kind of a character. He's just kind of like a goofy dude. And part of me kind of wonders – now, a lot of the people I know who know football better than me said there's not much truth to this, but I kind of wonder that he kind of freestyled a little bit. Mm. And I feel like that team, how much they talk about techniques and fundamentals and structure, and that's all good things, but like, how does that guy fit in there? And I feel like if you're the Niners, you just want to acquire talent because they've had so much, as was reported, you know, before week one when the Vikings were playing against them, you know, they've had this exodus of talent. So I feel like you just try to get talent and work around it. And part of me just thinks it's maybe Spielman being like, look, I need to get some reinforcement on the offensive line. I don't think it has anything to do with Sullivan. I think it just has to do with the number of injuries. And he wants a sixth-round pick, and I believe that's what he traded to get that guy from the Chargers. So it probably makes sense for the team. There's always that risk, you know, okay, are you going to is that going to come back and haunt you? And is this guy going to go take off with the Niners? But I don't know. You have to do something because you look at, you know, obviously it's DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller, but look at how they just chewed through that, like that offensive line. And you have to have reinforcements just in case you have another injury, because you can't, it's well documented that if you have a young quarterback who's constantly flattened, he's not going to last very long. And it seems like they put their chips all in with Teddy. So you can't, you have to have some, you know, some reliable, I guess, depth players. And I think that's what they got, I guess.
I kind of had an epiphany. Teddy's never had a good offensive line since he's been in the NFL. I mean, because last year they're decimated injuries. This year, similar. Yeah, this is par for the course for Teddy.
Yeah, I think back to when, like, you know, I can't remember which Carr it was, but the one in Cleveland who just got smothered and how he never took off. And
David Carr in Houston.
David Carr, yeah. And, you know, I'm trying to think. There's just been a slew of young quarterbacks, I think, who probably were pretty good and just, like, never were given a chance. At the same time, Teddy seems like he should be, I don't know, like he should be equipped to play. You want an offensive line, but you should be equipped to play with a weaker one because, look, he has playmakers in the backfield. He's a guy, if he's talking 70% completion percentage, he's not going down the field. And a lot is made of, like, can he throw deep? I think he can in certain instances when you catch the defense off guard or where, you know, like, the stars align a little bit. But in general, I mean, I think this is a guy who, I think his signature pass of the year is the one where Peterson completely missed the block and Teddy just, you know, kind of instinctually chunks the ball to him.
Yeah, it's like he almost wanted to play the Brett Favre freelancing banjo picking music.
Yeah,
and, when he's doing it.
And that's, I think, how, you know, it's such a hard thing to put on a young quarterback because you're like, you have to make a play. But look, even the Chiefs, Lions, and Bears were kind of making fun of these teams. These are NFL players who are paid NFL money. Like, if you have a depleted offensive line, they'll get to you every once in a while. So I think they need to – he needs to be equipped to make a play. And it's good to he can show kind of this – you know, he's improvising a little bit, and he's using his weapons because Thielen looked good the other day. Hopefully Jarius Wright gets going because he got that money.
I think Jarius Wright is happy with life as it is.
I think I heard you – was it with Luke where you had this conversation and Luke was basically like, yeah, don't pay NFL players. Cause
there are two types of NFL players. One, they're going to play hard, even if they're getting $10 and, you know, turkey sandwich at the end of the game. I think Everson Griffin's one of those. Brandon Fuska is one of those. Harrison Smith will be one of those. And then there's others. I don't want to question Jarius Wright's heart, but yeah, you get paid and then you don't really show up. That's fine. Yeah.
No, I don't know. That offense, like, Charles Johnson really hasn't done much. I think some of that, like, first of all, San Francisco game, you screwed up, so you can't really, like, take much from that.
Yep.
And I think you're basically looking at three games and one against the best defense in the NFL. So I think, especially with the bye week, and especially because it's not like the team says this, but I think the big selling point with this team, think back to when Leslie Frazier was fired, and I think you made a good point that there were a few moral victories, and it was a little bit like, look, he's a really good guy. I don't know, like, if he's a superior NFL coach. But when he got fired, there was so much criticism saying, hey, the Vikings are a mess, and how could they do this to him, and you have to get the next, you know, set of coaches right. And, you know, I was talking to Luke about this, and I said, look, if you can get a situation where you have an offensive coordinator who's been a head coach before and has no aspiration really to do it again, and you have a head coach who's a defensive coordinator – basically being co-head coaches, that's an ideal situation because almost every other coach in the NFL came either through the defensive ranks or the offensive ranks. And it's kind of like Mike Shanahan when he was in Denver. The big criticism was, look, he knows offense. He always drafted good offensive guys, but he didn't know how to kind of build a defense. And it worked out. I mean, obviously they had good teams there. But, you know, if you can set up that structure, that's kind of the strength of the team. And now when I think you have the bye week, you have this extra week to adjust and to get your players straight. Well, let's see this offense hum a little bit because you've been building up Bridgewater because you have weapons around him. And I don't have a lot of complaints about the defense. I mean, it would have been, you know, sweet in almost kind of a very bad way if they could have rocked, you know, Manning like they did with Rivers and with Stafford. But mm-hmm. The fact that they got to those guys, I think tells you that they're capable of putting hits on the quarterback. They will work around any deficiencies you have at strong safety. And I know people are going to bury Trey Waynes. I guess my expectation, just again from listening to people who are better, your Reefs, your Lukes, you know, the people like that who are better football minds than me, they're like, you got to give this guy a little time to develop. And who better development than Zimmer? So hopefully, I don't worry about the defense. It's just like, let's get this offense going because you have Peterson and you have these offensive weapons and let's see what it can do, because I think it should be capable of kind of like that Chargers game where once they got on that roll, it's just like you knew it was over.
My complaint against Jarius Wright and Charles Johnson, even before they got hurt, was you had three games to show what you could do, and then Thielen and Diggs show up not knowing that they're going to start, because Johnson and Wright basically came down to game time, and then, you know, put up some solid numbers against the best defense in football and the best trio of cornerbacks in the NFL. So that's really all I need to see.
And that's not, look, from a player perspective, I get how that would be negative, but from a organization standpoint, that's what you want. You want, mm-hmm. you know, they always,
you want competition.
Football.
Yeah.
Well, and next man up, that's like a coined trademark, you know, football term. And it's hard not to like Thielen, you know, especially because he's usually on the bubble a little bit. I get the impression that he's a good athlete, probably could have played like multiple sports at the high school or even maybe college level.
Yeah, like lacrosse or equestrian or polo or whatever other sports white people play.
So,
oh, water polo. There you go. That's the ultimate white person
sport. Water polo. That was actually big in California. They were like, Santa Clara had a good team, and I had a friend from St. Louis who played it and was actually pretty good too. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about it growing up here, to be honest, but maybe.
You know, it's weird. You know, Thielen still does have support, except I feel like a lot of the support he did have is starting to go towards Diggs, because Diggs is like the big, bright, shiny new object. And, you know, people just kind of have ADD when it comes to, you know, favorite sons.
I have a friend who grew up in Baltimore and is like a huge Maryland fan. And she told me when they drafted him, she's like, you got the best value you could get in that draft. And I take it with a grain of salt because I'm like, look, you saw, you know, this guy play in college. And
but you have to clarify, historic Big Ten power Maryland.
Yes, historic Big Ten power. Been in the Big Ten for years and always good. And I think they used to be good at basketball. I don't really know. But
That old guy, and then Juan Dixon. Stevie franchise.
But I think she's right. I mean, this is a guy who, in training camp, you couldn't ask for a better camp. There, no one went to camp, and other than the story about like Griffin and Khalil, which I think the moral of that story is, you know, Khalil seems like he can handle everyone except for like your elite defensive players, which isn't a, you know, great endorsement. But at the very
what are you talking about? He didn't give up a sack all year until three games into the Denver game, or three plays into the Denver game.
Yeah, yeah, and that again, that one was like, man, but either way, I think the big story was Diggs, and I understand why you have Sherrills and why you need to have a guy who's like kind of secure, you know, bringing down the ball, and that's how a guy like that survives in the league. It's a fundamental skill that, you know, I'm sure Prefer went to bat for him and said, hey, look, you got to get him on the roster. From the sounds of it, Diggs can be a gunner, and I didn't understand this, but Prefer makes it sound like it's a little more technical than, you know, run fast. Like, you have to understand how to get free and whatnot, but hopefully you see him dress a little bit more, even if it's for special teams, and then get accustomed to the offense, because I think once that guy, once the like technical side of football becomes second nature, he has so much athletic ability, and he's going to be like, he's one of those guys who I think is going to take your breath away when he has the ball. It's like, he can go, you know what I mean? I guess, look, I'm not tied to Charles Johnson. I like that story, but if there's a better player, I guess I'd rather see the better player play. And going back to Cordero Patterson, I made a joke. Last time I was on the podcast, I said, you know, my big hot take or whatever was Cordero Patterson was going to go off and Randy Moss moon everyone or whatever. But look, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And so
he can still moon Lambeau. He might have to buy a ticket.
People be like, what is this guy doing? Like, he has sweet hair, but what's he doing in the crowd here?
Yeah. Week 17, like, the Browns give him the last week off or whoever we end up trading him to, and then he's like, all right, I'm going up to Lambeau. Peace.
By the way, I love
catching the Greyhound.
When there was, what was that? It was the blood moon, right? It was like the eclipse and all that stuff.
Yeah, the day to avoid Facebook.
Yeah, no, but the only positive on Facebook is the, like, handful of people, and I know Zach Wright was one of them, one of our guys, put a Randy Moon, they're like, Blood Moon has nothing on this, and Randy Moon, or Randy Moss, you know, moon in the crowd, and I thought that was actually pretty clever, especially on a day when, like, literally, you know, every other picture was this weird-looking orange in the sky.
Here's a fuzzy photo of the Blood Moon taken from an iPhone 4. Congrats, guys. You're not going to get any hot photography anywhere else in here.
Yeah, not a great endorsement for an old iPhone. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's – I don't know what my original thought was, but at least Spielman – and I've talked to a lot of people about this. And at the very least, I guess, if you – out of that draft, I feel like you got Rhodes and you got Tre' Floyd, right? And then it was – Cordero was kind of the last one.
Yep, 29th.
I mean, the Patriots probably look smart in their own Patriots way because they're like, hey, look, we got all the picks. But, you know, if you go 2 for 3 in the first round there and you get value like Diggs, and actually Hodges, I think, was the lower pick, and some of these other guys, if you can get value in those later rounds, when you're evaluating a GM, you have to look at every, you know, every facet of how he acquires players. And you know, I guess if Diggs goes off and he's a great player, I'll forget about Patterson. And it was a fun, for lack of a better word, flash, you know, flash in the pan. But I'd like to see him get going. I think he has athletic ability, and I'm sure he's going to be one of those guys, you know, like ex-Vikings, like how'd they get away. But it doesn't matter if you have a guy like Diggs and he can play. And it looks like he just has – he's faster than everyone else, and he just needs to kind of – like every rookie, understand how the NFL game of football works.
And what really stood out to me is, you know, Mike Wallace was talking the other day that Stephon Diggs has the complete route tree given to him, and he's learning that. Whereas when Mike Wallace first started off in Pittsburgh, you know, the burner out of Ole Miss, he was just told, hey, why don't you run really fast and really far? And sure, that was the Mike Wallace playbook in Pittsburgh. And the fact that Diggs has the complete route tree down, and from what I saw at camp in person, was he was winning contested balls against Terrence Newman, against Xavier Rhodes, and looking pretty damn good. And, you know, if this guy can be a complete receiver and stay healthy, you know, the sky's the limit.
The health thing is the only thing that worries you, because it's like, especially with a player of that build, it's almost kind of like a basketball player where you see a guy get like so many knee injuries and all of a sudden they're just slower.
Sean Livingston, you done?
Yeah, that's yeah, exactly. And
his leg fell off.
And it's that was a weird like that kind of makes me sick when I see that. But you feel bad for the guy. But that's the one concern, because like football is like 100% injury rate, and that's the only concern is a guy like that. Cause you know, if you're a bigger, you know, Andre Johnson or Calvin Johnson or something like that, you know, like those guys can probably take a little bit bigger hit, but, and their possession receivers or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wish the best for him. And like I said, I think you have to have a guy like that emerge, because unless Patterson comes alive after the bye week, he's been a good special teams player in an era where, for the most part, you're not going to have you're returning 109 yards if you're trying to score from the end zone there.
If Rick can get a fourth round pick for Cordero right now, I'd snap that up in a second.
Sure, of course.
Probably even a fifth. I mean, because yeah, let's be honest, he's just taken up a spot on the roster. I think Diggs would be ready to go as a kick returner. You can even toss Thielen back there as well. Probably Sherrill's too. And you know, Cordero has a couple of catches, couple of here you go plays and. You know, he's not cracking the starting lineup at wide receiver anytime soon, unless there's like a catastrophic rash of three or four injuries. So why not just move him, or hell, just trade for more offensive line depth? Because why not?
Well, and the other thing too is Teddy Bridgewater's still young, and Zimmer brought us in for like a film session, and it kind of explained like times when Khalil basically got screwed, and times when Teddy got blamed for a pass that was good, and like. Patterson literally was not like counting the steps right and was just running the routes really poorly. And, at a certain point, look, this team hopefully will always kind of have a young core, and then they keep a few veterans around like Greenway to kind of show the way. And, the closer to a sure thing is you get in the NFL, you know what you're getting from them every year. But at a certain point, you don't want to screw Teddy Bridgewater by trying to get another guy going. And it's like, well, if you have other players, especially like a Johnson, whatever happens with him, look, he was a guy like on the practice squad, but they picked up and turned into something. You know, you don't want to kind of screw up Bridgewater trying to get another guy going when you have other options. I mean, that's the way I see it. And it's a bummer because it's like you knew what you got with Patterson. You knew that he played 1 year in college. He played JUCO for 2 years. He was going to be raw. He had all this athletic ability. But at a certain point, some players just need to change the scenery. It's really rare that you'd have, like, I think of the Minnesota sports equivalent of, like, Aaron Hicks, where he looked really bad and then kind of clicked. Maybe they'll wait around and see if it clicks, but I don't even know if there's playing time. And I think the stakes are high enough. If you have a 10-win team, you really can't have, like, a deficiency of wide receiver. So I think you're right. Hopefully it won't completely backfire on the Vikings, but if it does and you had Diggs work out, I guess you kind of say, you know what? One or two guys are going to slip away. That's going to happen.
All right. Something's that is not slipping away, hopefully, NFC North. And the Packers are the cream of the cream. The Bears accidentally won a game, and Detroit seems like they're dumpster fire. Now, with the Bears real quick, it kind of seemed like in the first three games that they were all in on an 0-16, completely tanking for the number one pick. They traded away Jared Allen, John Bostic, who I thought was really good. They cut Brock Vereen, who we picked up, who I wager will be starting within a month.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah. And then, Jay Cutler comes back, and of course he just goes out and wins a game because just to piss off Bears fans who I think we're warming to the idea of a complete tank, but that would be such a Cutler thing to do, would come and screw it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird situation where I believe he's from Chicago, or at least this felt like
he's from Santa Claus, Indiana.
Okay, but
I don't know why I know that.
That's actually pretty funny. I'm going to look up and see. I'm sure it's probably close by. But he called it kind of a homecoming stuff, and he's totally maligned and never even had like kind of Joe Mauer, obviously. You love him or hate him, but it just seems like I know a lot of people from Chicago, and no one likes that guy. And of course he's going to win. What I'll say is, look, it's the Raiders, and I don't care how the Raiders started the year. It's the Raiders. And I think they're going to – the weird thing is they have kind of a similar schedule to the Vikings. They're playing the Chiefs, Lions. Then they play the Vikings, of course, on November 1st, Chargers, Rams, you know, Broncos, of course.
Yeah, it's like the divisions play similar divisions or something like that. No, no.
That would make sense. I suppose it's like in the immediate vicinity or whatever, but that is a good point. What I'm saying is I think we're going to see over the course of time that Vikings are on a different level. I mean, I hope so. And some people were saying that the Bears wouldn't be as bad. Like some people were like, yeah, it's going to be a 3-win team or whatever. And then there was other national people I heard say, yeah, no, they're actually going to be like 7-9 and you're underestimating them. And I know that sometimes you have like a how do I put it? Like addition by subtraction. But man, I feel like they're trading away players in anticipation of trying to like kind of reload and reset, you know, the organization. And it's maybe not the only reason why maybe you go for it is because you think the Lions aren't any good and that you're, you know, there's a chance you can compete with a 2-2 Vikings team. But
then the Lions are like, screw you guys. We're the only one who knows 0-16, baby.
we have that distinct honor, yeah.
Now, with the Monday Night Football thing, with the Cam Chancellor stripping Megatron on the 1-yard line, then KJ Wright illegally, apparently, booping the ball out of bounds, even if the Lions got the ball back first and goal from the one, I still think they would have effed it up.
Yeah, I mean, the weirdest story with that is how it ties in with Daily Fantasy, of course. Where that one guy would have won like $50,000, now he's winning like $1.2 million or something like that. I still buy into it. It's kind of a game of skill or whatever. And by the way, I think they should legalize gambling and just like regulate it. I feel like you can regulate things that are legal more. And the bottom line is, I just don't want to watch a game and be like, oh, this is rigged. You know, find out like a few, you know, weeks later or whatever. But either way, what a weird rule and what a weird instance where like, it seems pretty clean cut. Like, how do you not get that right? You know what I mean? If you, I understand it's probably an obscure rule, but I'm sure those refs are preparing, whoever the head ref is being like, look, keep in mind in this situation, if this player does this, you know, that's illegal.
I'm guessing is that the back judge, he had a perfect view of Wright batting the ball out of bounds, but I think he missed the call in the moment, and then when he realized he missed it, he backtracked and was like, it didn't appear like he intended to bat a ball. You're going with the subjective angle?
Yeah, and there's always going to be a situation like where the ref kind of gets caught, you know, red-handed, or not red-handed, it's probably wrong, like, you know, they made the wrong call. Like Hockey Lee, I think, years back, I think Cutler was actually involved in that play where there was nothing
you could do.
It's just, how does the Seahawks get away with that? You know what I mean? Like
twice in the same damn corner of the same end zone.
No, like how does that happen? And especially when I watched that game and I was like, I don't even want to be watching this. Like, I think it was just the only thing on TV. And I was like, what are you doing, Seahawks? Like, don't make this a game. I know you don't have Marshawn Lynch, but the Lions, as much as what, they were 11-5 last year, like, they can't help themselves. And Ndamukong Suh probably actually is in a worse situation now. He's with this Dolphins team where they want the whole coaching staff fired, and I don't think he can fire like the head coach and the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator all in 1 year. But that team's a mess, and I don't know. And they lost fairly too. But the Lions can't help themselves. Like, how they go from – they should be competing with the Vikings. I'm saying this as someone who covers the Vikings, grew up a Vikings fan. They should be competing with the Vikings kind of to try to make for that wild card spot. They look like the same old Lions. I mean, especially in that Vikings game, that's obviously
even worse because Megatron's not Megatron. Ergo, Stafford isn't falsely propped up as a, you know, top 16 quarterback in the league anymore. And they're atrocious and they're bad on defense. I thought with Terrell Austin and, you know, with Nada coming in to replace Sue, essentially, he's hurt now. I still think they have some of the best linebackers in the league, even though Tulloch's been out. And they've been atrocious. And they're somehow worse than their 0-4 record suggests.
I just want to point this out just because it's in front of me. Santa Claus, you said it was Santa Claus, Illinois? Is where
Indiana.
From? Indiana, yeah. So that is actually really close to Louisville, at least according to Google Maps. and like almost kind of close by Nashville. So I don't know. I suppose Chicago would be your natural team there, but I don't know. I'm sure you can, you know, some of those places like Jordan Schaefer was from Hammond in Indiana, one of the Twins players, and he was a, you know, Bears and Blackhawks fan and stuff. But I was like, that's on the border. That's by
Hammond's right there. That's where the casino is.
Is that right?
That's where all the Chicagoites go. Yeah.
I've driven because we fly into Chicago and my brother went to Notre Dame and my dad and my two uncles went there. So I've driven by Hammond. I guess Hammond's a little better than Gary. Gary actually got a car broken into. For some reason we stopped there, which lesson learned, don't stop in Gary. But I didn't know where that Santa Claus, Indiana was. But yeah, he'd be like kind of right by Louisville. I don't know.
It makes sense then because he went to Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
Nashville. So. Yeah, there you go. You touched on daily fantasy sports. I wanted to talk about that with you for a second. And I always thought, like, there's no way that DraftKings FanDuel was going to stand on its own for, like, multiple years. Because I played a lot of online poker. And then, you know, we all saw the rise and fall of that, the eventual Black Friday in 2011, where all the sites are banned now. It's starting to come back state by state with regulated online poker. Eventually, it'll probably go federal. But I was just looking at that, and you know, they call daily fantasy sports a game of skill. I believe it is to a degree. And you know, it's a lot like in the same boat as poker, but you know, we all saw what happened with that. And I thought it was just a matter of time before some politician or state attorney would start grandstanding and be like, this is gambling. This is a scourge to the moral fiber of this United States of America. Yeah. Now, I thought it was going to be the off season, but this might collapse before the year is out.
I would recommend anyone. I just, it was kind of ironic, actually. I just listened to, ironic, I said, by the way. I listened to Outside the Lines, and they've done two features, and it's worth looking at both sides of this, by the way, because Deadspin's done some research and said, you know, Matthew Berry basically did a show for DraftKings, and
yeah,
I saw like,
he's open about that.
Had them on their front cover, and all these like pregame shows are all DraftKings centric. But Bob Lee, who I think is probably the most credible person at ESPN, like kind of did an investigation into it to start, and had all these people come in, and some guys saying you got to subpoena and get this information, and then the CEO from DraftKings came on ESPN. And he made some points where I was like, okay, dude, you know, like he was like 2% of people win most of the money here at DraftKings. But that's like saying, you know, look, only 0.01% of golfers win a lot of money in tournaments. And I was like, well, okay. Sure, but like it's not like some schmo can go on Augusta and play the Masters. You know what I mean? That's not like a fair comparison.
What are you talking about? Like you or I can go to Augusta and win the Masters because Booby Dixon has a big day.
I mean, it's just. Yeah, I don't – that was a little off. And then, you know, they really played up that like 0.3% of DraftKings people won money on FanDuel. But some guy like ran the numbers. I think it was Darren Rebell. And it was like – that's like $10 million. So the question becomes, okay, as part of your package for working for DraftKings that you can play at FanDuel with insider information. I know that gets kind of insidious and stuff like that, but –
Well, that's like one of the big strategies is you got to think of who like the general public – isn't picking, so you don't have like similar numbers. And yeah, if you work with DraftKings, you can see, well, X percent of people took player Y, so I'm going to take player Z, and let's go. And then I'll just get second place in the big FanDuel Sunday tournament.
Yeah, and keep in mind, like, when you see those advertisements, to my knowledge, those people are, like, professional writers who write about fantasy sports and are running algorithms. This is not some dude, you know, I got my two FanDuel teams or whatever. Like, he has a lot of FanDuel teams, and there's an algorithm. And it's if you can get that information, people are going to get it. If you have a buddy who works there and you can, you know, you can get a leg up, of course. If you can make $350,000 on a weekend, people are going to do that. And I think it does have to be regulated. The one, I guess, reassuring thing is this CEO basically was like, look, it's a game of skill. It's not like – he brought up, like, the odds are different than betting on a line. In general, like, it's a 50-50 proposition, and the people in Vegas are really smart with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've tracked lines not as – the weird thing I'll tell you about this whole game being a game of skill or whatever, as someone who writes about sports and spends a lot of time and obviously gets the information right away if players get hurt or whatever, I've learned, like, don't bet on this stuff. There's so much random – I never thought the Vikings were going to lose to the Niners. Not a way in hell. That team is so bad. And I was like – I get that it's a West Coast time, and it's, you know, Peterson probably should have played in the preseason in hindsight, and, you know, Bridgewater might, you know, freak out on Monday Night Football and in a, you know, hostile environment or whatever. But I was like, they're going to find a way. It might be an ugly, you know, 20-17 win, but look, it's week one, you know. At the same time, what was the, you know, line on that game? There's got to be people who probably went home pretty rich if you knew something about the Niners. And I get that. I'm not, again, I'll go back to, I think that it should be legal. I think it also, people should know, even though it's a game of skill, it's not poker. Like, there, it's human beings in this game, and you're going to have instances where Teddy Bridgewater freaks out or a player gets injured or whatever. It's why sometimes in your fantasy leagues, or, you know, expanding beyond that, in March Madness, you have some random person win your bracket, because look, Belmont occasionally wins a game, and, you know, the Richmond Spiders occasionally upset people. So I just say be careful with that, just because it is good to have sports knowledge, but you also don't have knowledge that I think these guys do, who write about it professionally and who may or may not have insider tips and are running algorithms. This is more than just like some guy who really knows football and picked Andy Dalton early in the year and got lucky with him or something like that.
See, there's something that I have a theory. Now, I have nothing to really base this on, but I feel like human nature would put this in, because you know, with poker and tournaments, there's, you know, like a database like Sharkscope, where you can look up usernames and you can see results and yada yada yada. There's nothing really like that readily available for daily fantasy sports. So, yeah, if you have a say you have a 10,000 person tournament, I kind of thought, you know, maybe, you know, if these, some of these sites aren't in the up, aren't exactly, you know, above board, you know, say 5,000 of those entrants are bots for the site. And then it'll be like, oh, well, we'll just figure out an algorithm for the widest net of lineups and with the lowest margin of error. And then we'll collect, you know, on top of our juice, on top of the rake, we'll take, you know, 60% of the prize pool with our little bots. And then we'll have one rube win the whole thing, and then we'll put his ass on commercial. Be like, I won $30,000 my first time playing daily fantasy sports. Well, lati freaking da. I better sign up.
Well, and of course, if you're that person, you're going to do that, because, first of all your buddies think you're the man. You know, it's you're the guy in that Patriots uniform who's like, you know, hunkered down at, it looks like a Buffalo Wild Wings or something like that, you know. And I won $2 million, or you know, even those commercials are sketchy in the sense that, like, they're cut up. Like, the guy's saying something, and all of a sudden it shifts the screen real quick, and he says something else, and I'm like, well, what was he saying in between? You know, like, I'm fine. I think you should regulate gambling, kind of for what you said, so that you don't have like some offshore, you know, sketchy guy in his boat, like, running a poker website. Poker is a game of skill. It's something that I'm bad at. Blackjack is a game of skill. But again, I think the best analogy would be, like, the guys who are winning are like MIT, who are playing like the big numbers and threw all this money together. And obviously there's no, you know, those guys, half that game is avoiding getting caught by the pit boss or whatever. But like, aside from that, I mean, literally they're just playing the numbers. These guys aren't really doing anything different. And it is a human game. And yeah, you're going to have guys who freak out, or like, on my fantasy team, how is Andre Johnson not doing anything? You know, I
guess he's garbage and he's old.
He'd be good, and he scored 0 points since I acquired him. And so it's a little different than poker, but the biggest, the analogy I have is, I think those guys who are winning, who are on TV, are essentially like this MIT crowd who are, you know, getting kicked out of casinos.
Now, all right, so you're bad at poker, so you're obviously coming to our home game sometime in the future. And with fantasy, you know, the fact that you acquired, so it sounds like you traded for Andre Johnson. I think we need to be in a fantasy league next year, too.
This is why you need to listen to our fantasy football podcast, which Luke Inman somehow did not promote on your podcast. Even though literally he's recording the day after I think he was on your show. Again, I struggle with days, as I said early in the podcast. But the running joke in that podcast, because basically all I do is run the board and, like, get them in and out of segments and stuff, so that we don't have like 30,000, you know, we don't spend 30 minutes on, you know, ads and don't talk about, you know, sleeper picks or whatever. But the running joke in there is how bad my trades are. I traded away Randall Cobb thinking, oh, he's going to be injured, I need someone right away. And it was like Steve Smith Sr. and Doug Martin or something. It was such a terrible trade. And then I traded Eddie Lacy thinking, oh, I, you know, my team was so depleted at wide receiver and I have enough running backs, I'm going to get Dez Bryant, who wasn't put on the short-term IR, so he has to be coming back in 6 to 7 weeks. And I basically, I'm 3-1 in one, or no, I'm 2-2 in one league and 1-3 in the other league. And somehow I'm like treading water, even though, like, I traded away Ben Roethlisberger after his great week and he happened to get hurt. And I, you know, even Lacy, I think, was hurt for a little bit, but Andre Johnson was like a big part of one of the trades. And I was like, he's got Andrew Luck. He has a track record of success. There were other people who were trying to get him. And so I get Andre Johnson. I'm like, woohoo. And then I look and I'm like, man, I might be dropping him this week. So it's, I'm not a good fantasy football player. And this is probably why I don't bet on sports.
Anymore.
Yeah.
After you got your leg, Sean Livingston.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the mob. Yep. All right. Now you mentioned, the podcast, we also mentioned Cold Omaha from the beginning. What's new from the Cold Omaha boys since you're kind of homeless?
Yeah, we are. We're floating around. We're still on KQ and 93X. We're on those websites. And I have a story up.
Noted sports powerhouse KQRS.
Well, you know what we said is, look, the number one show, right, mm-hmm. that just passed Bernard is KFan's morning show.
Yeah.
And we were like, what? And this is, I'm just speaking from the perspective of someone who is looking to try to get onto radio. I like podcasts, terrestrial radio, whatever, who had a morning show and who, like, beyond that, we had connections with, you know, like, I know John Bonas and I know those guys at Twins Daily and, you know, Wild Extra and Vikings Journal. I think there's a lot of good writers there, including Arif, who's on your show all the time. And we have Luke Inman, who, like, knows more about football than I know about any, like, he was on your show and I was listening and I just know the personnel of the Vikings. I don't really understand defense like he does. And he's talking about the personnel shifts and how this would work. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, you're explaining something really complicated to someone who doesn't know what day it is. And I'm figuring out what you're talking about. And we have all these very talented people who are, Luke has just this, and you know this, just this killer personality where I can be just like down in the dumps about things that didn't go right that day. And like, I see him and you just smile. Cause you're like, this guy is, I maybe was upset, you know, 6 years ago or something like that. He always is just cheery and kind of like has this crazy personality. And it's a guy who totally should be on the air. And it just kind of boggles the mind. I feel like you could have success if they would have kind of used 93X and KQ as leverage and said, look, this is, you know, KQ and 93X's sports site. And especially when you have Bob Sansevier, who's been doing, you know, like he was on KQ for 27 years. He's a Pioneer Press columnist. You have Philly, who played in the NFL, played for the Vikings for a little bit. Tom Bernard's willing to talk sports, was on the ticket for a little bit. And, you know, try to leverage some of these guys who really know a lot about sports. I mean, that's how I think you go after those guys. And like I said, the vibe's great. I mean, it's fun music and whatnot, but
90s hip hop and R&B for people who doesn't know and Pandora exists.
Yeah.
Or Spotify.
And like I said, I want to be fair to them. They've been good to us. This is not a lot of people, because I notoriously went on Deadspin and aired my grievances with Bleacher Report.
Well, no, what do you mean? I mean, it's not like the first thing that pops up on Google if you search Tom Schreier. Apparently, Deadspin has a good SEO.
Hey, at least it's not my Bleacher Report writer profile. Not to say, actually, the stuff I was writing at the end was very good, but I'm glad I'm not immediately associated with Bleacher Report. Although I still have friends who will ask me, they're like, are you writing for Bleacher Report? And I'm like, you really have not, like thought about me for like the last 3 years, right? Because like a simple Google search would just say, hey, top 200 ways Bleacher Report screwed me over. I'm not probably not writing for that site anymore. But either way, point being, they're like, when is round two coming? And I said, look, the difference is they gave us a place to write. We're still credentialed, with the exception of the Wild deal, which is I don't want to talk too much about. But you know, the other team, I think the other teams see value in what we do. We do try to go a little more in depth. The issue we have, and I think we're going to get to a point where we have to launch a site, because I have like so much information at my fingertips, and I'm like, I just don't have like space to write as much as I want to write. And we want to be podcasting more and stuff like that. So that's the only issue there. But I forget what the original premise of the question was at all.
I don't know. It was like, what's going on with Cold Omaha?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I'm answering that in a very roundabout way. But yeah, we'll try to look at, you know, launching a site. I would like to try to do something with the men-centric, so that would be like Twins Daily, Northern Pitch, Wild Extra. I would like to, you know, try to do a Wolves blog for them, and Vikings Journal. And I'm trying to do a lot and realizing, like, I want to sleep, you know, at some point, and I do cover these teams. And at the same time, put out good work, you know, like, I've noticed, like, my quality's dipped just a little bit. It's still worth reading. Please read my stuff. I think my latest one is on the Twins and how they're, you know, there's going to be raised expectations and a lot of question marks. Is Eddie Rosario going to regress? Is Miguel Sano going to be as good as he was this year? Can Byron Buxton's back get going? You know, is who's going to be in the starting rotation? Can Phil Hughes get back? Can Maurer get back to a, you know, a 300 hitter who got in base 40% of the time? And with the Vikings, like, one of the things I pointed out was, you know, and again, it's because it's kind of personal. Like, I was like, I want the Vikings to do well against the Broncos because I want people to realize, like, this team is better than what you guys saw. And everyone, you know, not that it really matters, but, you know, people should realize, like, the team that showed up on Monday night was atrocious. Like, that team was so bad that the organization doesn't even want to talk about them. And at least the showing against the Broncos, it was not a good start. And I know that Blair Walsh missed a field goal, and how they gave up that long run is beyond me. But, like, at the very least, you saw a team that kind of, what Zimmer said, they kind of fought back, and it gives you hope that you can beat the Chiefs, the Lions, and the Bears, and you know, kind of go into the heart of the schedule being like, look, they're confident, they're rolling, and if the offense is good enough, it'd be fun to see, like, a competitive Packers game on the 22nd when people are locked into football, and bottom line is this team just has to play better, you know, at home. But again, I forgot what the original premise of the question was, but well, that was one of the stories I wrote, and we try to have, like, Sam goes so in depth on these, finding really good stats and stuff before games. You can find that on Cold Omaha. I'll try to think of a Vikings angle. I'll be doing a lot of Wolves. I'll do some stuff with the Twins, just like end of season. You know, where's Maurer at? Can Hughes come back? Sano and Buxton, and maybe even look at some of these guys who had bad second halves, but. We try to go a little more in depth than just, you know, what did a player say today, or, you know, this guy's bad and this guy's good, you know, looking at kind of the gray area. And we're trying to look at how do we get that information out to people better and how do we expand with what we have. Because I think there's a demand for it. It's just like we need to find a way to find that audience and give our writers space to write and do their thing.
See, you and Inman are my favorite guests to have on because I have to work the least.
Sorry, I talk so much.
No, it's all good stuff, though, and it's all things that I would ask you anyways, except you just asked yourself.
I literally, it's so funny. Like, I'm normally a quiet person. I'm sure you don't realize this, and anyone who's heard, like, the Wake Up Caller or podcast, like, think I'm lying, but I swear, like, I just kind of, like, run out all my talking, and even in writing, like, I write, like, all my thoughts are just gone. And so I'm just kind of like a zombie that walks around during the day. And then, like, once I get going, you know, once I get talking. But and truly where it comes from, and I'm glad other people are excited about it, is that, like, this is fun. Like, as much as this industry has just gotten killed because the newspapers are doing poorly and because radio stations are doing poorly and because it's essentially monopolized. I don't want to take away from what 1500 does, but KFAN's the big radio station, you know, like, again, the Pioneer Press is really good writers, but, you know, the Star Tribune, obviously, has you know, they're kind of creeping into St. Paul and stuff like that. And you know, what I want people to realize is, like, look, there is still room for, like, different kind of writing, and there is some room for, you know, we're trying to do video and podcasts and more long form stuff like that. And you know, when these guys get talking about it, you know, like, I Zach Bennett and stuff like that, and Brandon Warren, they're so talented, and we're just trying to get them a space where, like, they can do their thing. You know, it's almost like they just, I think, need more room and need more attention and probably a little bit of editing, as much as some of those guys might like not like that being said. And it's the same thing for me. Like, if you let us go, look, I talk a lot and I have a lot to write, and we spend so much time around there. It's like, these guys, we should get these stories out. We should have a Stephon Diggs story, and we should be looking into that because people should be interested.
If you guys at Cold Omaha need an ombudsman, hit me up, because I would be the best ombudsman ever, because it's like, hey, Andy, can we say this? Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's really going back to, like, where the inspiration comes from. It's really Grantland, obviously, and it actually kind of scares me that...
What about Black Grantland?
I need to read that. I think Greg Howard just came out a story about how that like didn't come to be, and I followed that pretty closely. First of all, it's something that should be out there. You know, I mean, I think there's really good stories to be told and to be a really fun site. Like with Bill Simmons, I still don't know what that guy was thinking. When ESPN's actually done really good coverage of the NFL, they broke, obviously, that story with the Patriots and how, like, Goodell basically screwed up that situation. And Dan Van Natta is probably one of the best investigative journalists, even going as far as he knew that, you know, Adrian Peterson and Jerry Jones had talked. You have guys like that. Like, let those guys do reporting and stuff. And you can say what you want about Goodell, but why was that like the?
You mean you'd rather see ESPN do investigative journalism like that rather than Stephen A. Smith calling out Kevin Durant?
Yeah, and like, what an idiot! Like, I don't even want to like Jason Whitlock is an idiot too. But like, the one good point he brought up is like, why is that any different than Bill Simmons going after Roger Goodell? I don't know. But the problem there is I kind of wonder what's next. Like, Grantland really doesn't have a face, and I really want it to continue because I love the podcast they do, and, like, I love the writing, and, like, that's what I want to bring to Minnesota. I think there's – beyond sports, they're just good Minnesota stories to be told, and, like, people so willing to do it, and it's frustrating on my end that it's just, like, this is the slowest process ever. I mean, I never thought doing a website would take this long, but it has.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's really easy and really fast to do a crappy website, hence purpleftw.com.
There we go. There we go. I thought you said Bleacher Report, and I was like, I'm not creating another Bleacher Report. Yeah. The world is off of that.
All right, Tom. Our cup overfloweth again. Follow him on Twitter at tschreier3, part of Cold Omaha. And anything else to plug? Like, what's your next article?
The big one coming out is I'm going to make a case. I'm going to put the Joe Mauer contract in perspective. And make the case essentially that, look, you can't say, get all mad about the team paying him $23 million when you want Sano and Buxton and any good player, Eddie Rosario, Aaron Hicks, Brian Dozier, whatever, to stay in Minnesota. Look, there's going to be good ones, bad ones. The guy got concussed. That's why he's not behind the plate. And he needs to get going. And Terry Ryan has said that much. He's like, yeah, we want to see him get back to where he can be in the race for the batting title. So I'm going to do a big one on Bauer. But see, I'm going to talk a lot about these players, the guys who had poor second halves, the guys who – these rookies, you know, try to do features on that. If you're a Wolves fan, I'm going to, you know, try to talk about these young guys who are exciting. For Vikings fans, really read Sam Ekstrom. And I'll kind of fill in the cracks where he's, you know, something maybe he didn't pick up or whatever. But Sam's the best. Read Luke's stuff. Read the Reef stuff. It's phenomenal. And I'll try to be at practice and try to – maybe we'll do a Stefon Diggs story or something like that.
Once again, that's 37 reasons why Sam Ekstrom is the best.
Sam
Ekstrom. Slideshow.
By the way, how many is this? Has he been on three? Did I tie him?
I think you passed him because you had your own and you've been on two together.
I pass him with length at the very light. This is why people should not be surprised when I wrote like that 8,000 word story on Bleacher Report. I really didn't think it was that long. Like when I submitted to Tim Marshall, when it was the guy who edited it, he goes, the original thing was 10,000 words. And he goes, dude, there's like books in the Bible that are shorter than this. And I was like, well, shit, man. Sorry. But I was like, yeah, that's I talk at length and I write at length. I can't help myself.
All right. Tom Schreier, Cold Omaha. Thanks a lot, babe.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And you know what else? Core Power, you already know. Highest quality protein from Superior Real Cold Filtered Milk. Getting your pump on, bro. Yeah, I'm trying to get the miniature Matt Burke slimming down from 220 down to a svelte like 170, something like that. So working out, Core Power, big part of it as well. 26 grams of protein per bottle. Protein for hashtag everyday awesome. Visit corepower.com. Get it at a store near you. All right. And also, showing some love, tell a friend, purpleftw.com/love, all the various ways to support the show. Click through on Amazon, and you know the drill. But we're gone, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. We got a reef in the hopper. Hit us up on Twitter at Purple for the Win. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/purpleftw podcast. Subscribe, rate, review on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher. Tune in radio and do the same. Yeah, do the same. Whatever. And the website, as always, purpleftw.com. But until next time, I'm Andy Carlson saying, Skol Vikings, don't lose a game. Oh, bye-bye.
The music for the Purple for the Win podcast was created and produced by Deeb. To hear more of his tracks, check out soundcloud.com/Deeb.
We needed to get this right.
Mm-hmm.